our March 1st to order. We do have 4 items that have a lot of substance to them. So we're going to try to get through them. And if we don't get all the way through them, then we'll just make a decision on what the next steps are going to be at that time. Some are for discussion, but actually item B is for committee approval, and the others are going to be asking for next steps. So we have some decisions to make tonight as regarding where to go next with these items. All right, so the first item is a discussion on representation for Tukwila Village, the Community Development Association. I see we've got that in our background for Derek and so the Sullivan Center. So Derek, would you tee us up on this discussion?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hogarty. And this is an item, we do not have to have any decisions anytime soon. So if the committee needs to move this item to a later committee, that's totally fine. Basically what you have in your council packet on page 1 there starts the memo that gives you some background about the Tukwila Village Community Development Association, the nonprofit that eventually will take over management of the Sullivan Center Plaza and all of that. And it describes in the background about that organization, and it's much broader than just managing the Sullivan Center space. It is a community development association with a very broad vision for helping the community. The discussion section really highlights what the item is about, and that is, does the council want the city to have a role in appointing a member to the board of that Tukwila Village Community Development Association? So you may remember a couple of years ago when we were forming the organization, I said we would bring this to the issue to the council for the council's input on what role they would like the city to have. And so that's what this item is about. You can see there are 4 options that we see as staff for you to consider. Those are on page 2. And below the 4 options, I gave just a very brief sort of pro and con of a couple of those options. Of course, there's a lot more detail that we can provide. So we're happy to answer any questions that you would like. If you want to roll this to a meeting with less things on it, that's totally fine too.
All right, I will start with Verna and then and see what you have. What comments, observations?
I have a question. So I'll start with my questions. So right now, the mayor sits on the board, correct? Right now, he's on the board. Is he
correct.
A voting member of the board, or is he kind of like an ex officio member of the board?
Voting member.
So he is a voting member.
And that is the position we're talking about. So the council can decide what you would like to do. The city has the authority to appoint a person as a voting member to the board, which is the role he's in, and you can decide what you want to do with that going forward.
Okay, so as I'm understanding this right, the board adopted bylaws that provide for the property owner and the city to each appoint one member to the board. So right now, that is the way it is. So if I'm understanding this correctly, let's just say, you know, the council decides the city shouldn't participate. They would have to amend their bylaws if they didn't want any city participation, or it would be left to the administration whether or not they want to do it, right?
Right.
Okay. Okay. Has the board expressed an opinion one way or the other about this?
We have not. I have not brought this issue up with the board. This was something that the city, that we did as staff administration to make sure the city was protecting the city's interests, mm-hmm. as that whole thing was moving forward. We wanted to balance out the control of the property owner, to be really upfront about it. We wanted to make sure that, you know, so we have not asked the current board if they have an opinion on it. We really wanted to check in with the council first.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll yield back. I might have some further questions or comments, but I'll turn it over to Tom.
Okay. I'll go around again then. Tom.
I do have a couple of questions. And I might need you to just remind me of a couple of things, Derek. What role does the builder have right now in this oversight of the Sullivan Center?
So the builder was a development corporation. Let's just call it the builder right now, because the name of that organization is very similar to this nonprofit, but they're totally separate organizations. But because you get the word Tukwila Village and all of this, it starts getting confusing. But the builder built and developed this property and owns the property today. And so the builder, who is the developer and the property owner, basically has authority today over the Sullivan Center for how to manage that space at this moment.
When does he relinquish authority on that?
So we have a legally binding agreement where the city has an option to take over management of the Sullivan Center space and also to assign that option to a community organization, which is this Tukwila Village Community Development Association that this board is in charge of. And so basically what it means is when that, the current plan is when this TVCDA board, this nonprofit board, when they feel ready to take over the management of the Sullivan Center, then the city will sign over our option and then they will enter in to a lease with the property owner developer for 40 years, where then they have the control of using like the public spaces.
So the builder,
there's no set date. There's no set date. We keep kicking that can down the road. But to answer your question, there's no set date. We keep renegotiating that to give them, because the nonprofit's not been ready to take over management. And so hopefully this fall, this summer, they'll be ready to take over management of the space, hopefully.
It seems like it's moved very slowly, and at times it appears clumsy, if I could say that, you know, with the operation of the restaurant and then the rental of the space there. Like, well, who do you call if you want to rent the space? You know, that just seems like it hasn't been really clear. And I want to ask, should we even be in this? I mean, why don't we hand it over to Parks and Rec and just let them do it? Maybe
that's option five. So it has been clumsy. In my opinion, it's been clumsy. You know, like, first off, it's very confusing for everybody because the property owner is the entity that has the authority to lease out the cafe space. So, you know, there's a coffee shop there called Konakai Coffee. It's the property owner that leases that space to the coffee shop. So the city and the nonprofit have no authority in that whatsoever. That's the property owner with Konakai Coffee, because this is privately owned property. You know, this is the plan always was, this is a privately owned development, and we're just trying to find a way to get some public access inside a privately owned development. You know, the city made a decision years ago to not develop it themselves, to not manage it themselves. So, so that even when the Tukwila Village Community Development Association takes over managing the Sullivan Center, it's not the entire building. It's the meeting room, it's the kitchen that's attached to the meeting room, and it's the plaza. So it won't ever fix up any issues with the commercial spaces on the site. Now, to get to your question about having Parks and Rec take it over, that's not the plan that was in the original agreement, the 2012 DDA between the developer and the city, was for the developer and the city to form this nonprofit and then hand over the management of the space to this nonprofit. So that's the plan that's been in since 2012. So we're still trying to implement that. So I don't know what, to get to your question about Parks and Rec taking it over, it's not clear to me if the city would have a legal authority to just do that. I think we'd have to have an attorney look at the agreement and see, because that wasn't part of the plan. Now, maybe the property owner would agree to it, you know. So if the property owner would agree to it, that's a different story, you know. It's a matter of whether the property owner would agree to it.
Okay. I'd be interested in if that is the pathway that's available. Outside of that, I probably want the appointment to fall in line with how we do other appointments, which I guess is option one. Is that right?
Yeah,
the city
correct.
Standard
option
process
one.
For appointments on cities or boards. So, you know, I'm not sure why we're involved with it. You know, it seems like it takes probably more time than we get out of it. And that being said, maybe I would be interested, could someone like Parks and Rec activate that space? But if that's not an option, then I'd probably want to just go down the road to how we do our other boards and commissions. That's my thoughts. I'll yield back.
All right. So this isn't actually a city entity. I think that's discussed. So on option one, it says the mayor could appoint the city's representative and the council could confirm the appointment, which is like we do appointments for city boards and commissions. I think that's what you're saying, Tom.
Yeah.
The next sentence is interesting to me because it says appointees could include any city elected official, a staff member, a resident, or anyone else. Aren't there going to be residents on this anyway? Why would we appoint a resident? So what I would be interested in right now is look into whether or not we want to be involved. We ask the council or an elected official, one of us, as a member, just because that would help us with some involvement in it, and we would feel like we have some, we've got some stake in the game or whatever. But on the other hand, I would like to have legal go through that and make sure that that's not going to cause some problems, look at some different scenarios. So I would be looking at number one, or actually I think that's number two, number one or two. But I want to know if there are some potential conflicts of interest. Is that sort of like us always having a member on the Tuckahoe Pantry board or something? So, but I'd be interested into looking into it. I'm not going to say for sure that's what we want to do. So that's my thought right now at this time. And so I'm going to go back over to Verna because you said we'd go around again. Oh, Verna, Mike.
Oh, so sorry. So when you said it's the gathering space and then that one kitchen off, like if I'm in the gathering space looking towards Kona Kai, it would be that kitchen space to the right behind the door. And that is not to be confused with the kitchen that's associated with Kona Kai, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, and my feeling is with this is that, you know, when we've envisioning the city and the residents and everybody about Tuckahoe Village all these years, we had, you know, we heard loud and clear from people that we want a community space and it needs to be a community space. And I believe as council members, we answer to our constituents, which are the residents of Tukwila. And to me, I would want perhaps maybe as a council member, while they're still getting going, to actually kind of, you know, to represent the interests of our constituents. Yes, I know that there are residents on the board. I believe so, right, Derek? I mean, I think there's residents that live in Shag, which is perfectly appropriate.
Right.
you know, and I know this is kind of just getting going and, you know, I've expressed some concerns about, you know, what's going on in the space and those types of things. But, you know, I kind of look at this, I hate to even say it, it's kind of like the pool, right? You know, we felt that we fought so hard for something that we weren't quite ready to let go yet because we wanted to make sure it was going to be a success. And so I would say I would feel more comfortable with having, you know, either somebody from the administration or a council member sit on the board. It, you know, if it's the mayor, it's the mayor, or if it's council member, whoever, but we can work that out later. Certainly needs to go through legal. But just to kind of keep eyes on it as to what the original vision was for that space. I mean, that's just my feeling. But I would recommend that we bring this before the full council. I think Councilmember Hogarty, you're right. This needs to be a full council decision, and I'd be in favor of, you know, not necessarily moving it out with a recommendation, so to speak, but let's just see what the council thinks. That's my feeling
on
it for now.
Yes, thank you so much. And so, Tom, did you have any concluding thoughts?
I would say that maybe you like the pool. I mean, it turns out that a pool district was fine to run the pool, you know, once they got control of that. I don't know. I think as a council member, I got other things that I think should get my time and attention. If somebody wants to operate and activate this community space, then let them. And I think it needs less council involvement, and we could be doing other things, and maybe less administration involvement. So I don't know what pathway that would be. Maybe appoint somebody, let Parks and Rec do it. So I don't know that it needs the attention per se, because I think they can figure out how to activate it and do it in a way that represents the community. So that would be the one I'm in favor of, which may not be listed.
Okay, thank you. So I am really keeping track of time, and it sounds like we could have this discussion for full council without us giving any particular recommendation, but we've got a preview of it, which is good. So we had a little bit more time to think about it. So ask my fellow committee members, are you good with the recommendation to provide direction? We're not going to do that because we could churn on that for a while. We're going to forward this to the committee of the whole without a recommendation, but keeping in mind that we have had we've had a little bit of extra time to consider.
Yeah. Paul might change my mind in the meantime.
All right. Thank you, Derek.
Yep.
So this is to be continued. Yes, as all these are. So the next item is the buildable land analysis and growth targets. Jamie, I see you're here. So, could you introduce this to us? We can't.
Hi, Jamie. You're on mute.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilmember Hogarty. So this is the buildable lands analysis and growth targets. This is something that we've been working on for the past couple of years, you know, as part of, and other cities have around the region as part of implementation of the Growth Management Act. So every 8 years, you know, all the cities have to do an analysis of their land supply to see what kind of capacity they have for new development to accommodate housing and jobs. And so we just finished up steps 1 through 3 in November. So we did the first step, which was looking to see what kind of achieved density we accomplished with housing and commercial development. And then we looked at the, you know, given the zoning that we have for different areas of the city, we looked to see how much future development we can accommodate for housing and commercial development. And so these numbers that we, the amount of capacity that we find, you know, the amount of capacity that the city has kind of feeds into these growth targets that each city has to adopt in preparation for the comprehensive planning that we'll be doing in 2023-2024. So I think that's a general overview of kind of a background on the growth targets and then the buildable lands analysis. So what we found is that our current housing unit capacity is 7,255 units. And we have an increased capacity from the last round, the last time we did this, because we've adopted some new zoning in the Tukwila Urban Center. And then our current job capacity is 20,550. So that's, we have enough land supply to build commercial development that would house 20,550 jobs. And so then when you're, so King County assigns the growth targets and the Growth Management Planning Council reviews the growth, you know, the initial baseline targets. And I think actually many might be able to fill in this information a little bit better.
Thanks, Jamie. So Jamie's been working on the buildable lands, and she's also done all the analysis for the growth targets. And King County Council staff came and gave a briefing to council on what, you know, the bigger picture of what the growth targets mean, how they come about it. So it's under the GMA. They look at the regional growth policy from PSRC. They base their numbers on the forecast from PSRC and Office of Financial Management, OFM. And then they look at the, how do we allocate this for throughout the region. So based on those numbers, the region's going to grow by 1.3 million people. 50% of that growth is going to be in King County. And within King County, then there are 10 core cities. So then the numbers get chopped up, and for these 10 core cities, they come out to 112,000 housing units. And then the negotiation process between these 10 core cities starts in terms of what their capacity is. Do they have enough capacity to accommodate this growth is one criteria. The other, they use like three or four different methodologies to determine what these allocations should be. Some of them are, how many units does the city currently have? What was their growth pattern? How many jobs does it have? How can we meet the housing jobs target? So they come up with numbers in five different ways, and then they take an average, and they call it a baseline. That's where City of Tukwila's baseline, which is on your page number, packet number, you know, I'm trying to find where it is. So page number five of this memo, and I can share my screen if everyone wants to see this real quick. So these are the target baselines that they've come up with. So for housing for Tukwila, it ranges from 2,000 to 10,000 by those five different methodologies. And the average comes up to 5,612 units until 2044. So it's a long-term growth target. And then for jobs, it's, you know, those are the ranges, and the baseline is at 14,000. Now, you'll see the difference between 5,600 and 6,500. So what happens in this negotiations is different cities say, we're really not going to be able to accommodate this growth. So there was about 3,200 units that were unallocated. And if everyone took, you know, their fair share, about 700 per unit that had the capacity, so our numbers would then end up being 6,500 units, which average out to about 260 units per year for this 25-year construction time period. And in terms of the process now, it really isn't anything we need to do per se, other than King County Council will adopt these numbers as part of the countywide planning policies. And then 70% of the cities have to ratify them in order them to take effect. What it means for Tukwila is, you know, we know that we've done the capacity analysis. We know we have the capacity for it. We don't control the market. We don't know if we'll get these, but we have to plan for it. So we have to have the roads, the utilities, the infrastructure, so that we can take our fair share of the regional growth. And for our city, we have impact fees for parks, for traffic and others that any kind of growth then pays into for those kind of infrastructure improvements related to that particular growth. So that's where we're at. We wanted to brief the council committee. The next steps would be, if you see any concerns with these numbers, we can take that information back to King County staff. If you're okay with it, we can let them know. Some cities have written formal position, statements to King County staff. For instance, Kent has taken a position that they can't accommodate all of their growth because of their specific conditions. They have larger household size, so even though the numbers are like that, they don't think the housing units are going to be that much because each of their housing unit can accommodate more people. So things of that nature. From staff's review of these numbers, we feel like the baseline numbers, given all the other considerations, are okay for Tukwila, that we have the capacity to accommodate them. We don't generally think we'll get that many, but we can plan for that. If committee wants to forward this over to the committee of the whole, we can put this in the committee in full council mailbox box, or send them by email if you think this is information that would be useful for others. But we're open for any kind of suggestions you have on the numbers. So this is a deeper dive, and the presentation that you had from King County staff was a bigger picture of what, how this is done. That's all I have on this topic.
Kathy, you're muted.
I'll say that again. Thank you, Minnie. And I'll start this time with Tom with your questions, comments.
Okay. I do have a couple questions. So this would be for Minnie or Jamie, I'm not sure. On page 4 of our packet, page 2 of your memo, they went through this exercise a few years ago, and they said the existing housing target was 5626 at that time. Do you know what our current housing inventory is right now?
Member McLeod, this is Minnie. Yes, on the next page, we showed you the numbers on a little graph that shows in 2010, we had 7,755 units. And then pretty much for 8 years, they went up slightly. But most of our growth occurred in the last couple of years, and so our current housing count is 8,625 units. Now, this is give or take. I mean, it's not exactly this much because it's data based on Office of Financial Management that we tell them every year how many units got built, how many got demolished, the net change and all that. And then, so this is the best information we have, that these are the number of units we currently have on the ground.
Okay. So for a long time, we've been above the target.
No, that's right? New, additional new. So the target is on top of 8,625, we will get 6,500 more.
Oh, I see.
So okay. It's the new units, that new growth that is coming to Puget Sound region and our allocation of that growth.
Okay, so we have currently, okay, so then back up. In 2015, we needed an additional 5,600, and we didn't come anywhere near then meeting that need.
Yeah, we planned for that. We had the capacity for that. We didn't get it in the next, but that was, I think, 2035. So we're not fully there to the full horizon.
Okay.
Yeah.
But now in this attempt, we're saying that we need 7,255 on top of our 8,600 that we have. Does market rate housing, affordable housing, all of that counts in the total?
That's right.
Okay. All right, I want to know how these negotiations happen. I envision Jack Pace around a poker table with sunglasses and a visor. And how is he exactly negotiating and cutting deals with other cities to where this is proportional? I mean, what are they based proportion on? Is it on the available space?
That's one criteria. Yeah, so capacity is one criteria. If you can't accommodate, then they'd look deeper, because Puget Sound Regional Council has to certify our comprehensive plans, right? So if cities zone all their land very low density and they don't want that growth and they don't have those regulations, then Puget Sound Regional Council can go and say, we're not going to certify your comprehensive plan because you didn't accommodate for this. So that's where the buildable land analysis also comes in, which is done periodically to kind of see what can happen within your regulations on the ground.
But if I was a city and I didn't really want a lot of growth, not in my backyard, I could zone it in a way where I just can't accommodate this, and that'd be okay, or there's a consequence to that?
There would be the consequence that Puget Sound Regional Council will not certify your comprehensive plan. You're not eligible for any kind of funding and transportation and all those kind of things. So, plus some, yeah, so those would be the ramifications from that.
Okay, that's it for now. I yield back.
Okay. So our current housing unit capacity, well, I'm going to back up. The first question is we were talking about 10 core cities. Is there some place in this memo that it says that Tukwila is one of those 10 core cities, and are we?
Yes, we are. So there are metro cities, which are Seattle and Bellevue, you know, the larger. So they get a different proportion. The 10 core cities would be Kent, Renton, Tukwila, so some of these suburban cities that aren't Seattle and Bellevue.
Okay, I think that needs to be in the memo. I talked about core cities, but it doesn't say that we're one of them. So
okay, that makes that change. Yep.
Yes, thank you. Another thing that wasn't clear was, so where in this document, where does it tell our existing housing? Is that chart where it says 8625 that's on page mm-hmm. 5?
Yes.
So that's where we have the information about what the existing housing is.
Yep.
So then the little box below that where it says current housing unit capacity, is that what has been determined that we have the capacity to do in addition to what we have now?
Yeah, the capacity came from the buildable lands analysis, and Jamie can speak to that. But basically, we look at the zoning of the cities. We take out the unbuildable land. So if there are streams, water courses, you know, any kind of critical areas, those are taken out. Right-of-way areas are taken out. And then you look at the net land and what it's zoned for. That probably gives you those numbers.
Okay. So... our current housing unit, I'll just talk about housing units because the jobs sort of follow along, would be that on top of the 8625.
Correct.
Okay. So that's our unit capacity if we do what? Just zone for apartments? Or there's just a lot of things in here that I'm trying to figure out. So is that our housing capacity if everything's an apartment? Or how did you figure that out?
You figure that out. I mean, that's the city's policies. Though this doesn't do anything in terms of whether it's all apartments. So that's through the planning policy documents like the comprehensive plan. If we want to encourage more home ownership and, you know, those kind of things. And so then those get implemented through zoning in terms of what the minimum densities are, what built form is allowed, how much height and all that. So this doesn't change any of that. This is looking at what we have adopted policies and what the capacity is based off the current adopted policies and regulations.
So, or the current zoning, kind of.
Correct. Just
mainly the current. Okay. So with the zoning that we have now, we've got 7255. All right. So then we are being asked to, as our share, to add how many more units?
To plan for. Yeah.
Is the number more than this?
6,500, that's on the page. No, that's our capacity, and what we're being asked for is 6,500.
So we do have the capacity right now?
Correct.
To do what they're asking us to do?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then I think we're okay. If we have that capacity, the county is asking us to commit to at least that capacity, then we'll be okay. They're not going to pull our comprehensive plan certification from us. That's my main concern.
Yes, you're right.
This is Jamie. If you look on page 6, there is a pie chart that shows for the zoning that we have now, you know, looking at the capacity, what the, you know, the relative capacity of all the different zoning districts within the city. So that gives you an idea, you know, for single family, that's 19%, and then the rest are mixed use and higher density zones than low density residential. So 19% of that 7,255 number is low density residential.
But we wouldn't have to change any zone we have now in order to reach, because who knows what's going to happen with it,
that's,
right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, then I'm comfortable with it because this is within our range of, this is something that we can do, and I'm going to ask my fellow council members if they have any other questions or comments.
I didn't get to weigh in.
At all.
You missed me.
I just missed you because I...
That's okay. That's okay. I get it. No, but anyway, I mean, really, the only thing I have to add, because you guys asked all the questions, but I was mainly focusing on that, you know, staff is recommending approving the baseline numbers. What we're doing is we're planning for the growth. We're planning, we need to have the infrastructure. And like you said, we have our impact fees and all of that stuff. Growth pays for growth. And I think that I trust that if this was out of alignment, staff would have brought that to our attention. So I agree with Kathy and I think with Tom, I think Tom's in the same place, that this is fine. I think that you're requesting committee approval, and that works for me because you're right. We don't want to jeopardize our comprehensive plan certification. That would be a bad thing. And all those other little questions about, you know, multifamily housing versus, all of that, right, is in your comp plan doc. Right. So this is just your growth target, which, yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. The only thing I would add clarification on that is that in a couple of years, when the next round of comprehensive plan updates is going to be in front of council, that'll be based off of these numbers.
Right.
So the transportation element will look at, this is the growth we're going to get. And these are, you know, some of the things. So that detailed analysis of whether we are ready for this kind of growth will be the premise for doing those comprehensive plan updates in the next couple of coming up years. So we haven't done whether Tukwila is ready for these numbers, but we'll do that through the comprehensive planning process. Just wanted to clarify that. Yep.
All right. So anything else? Tom, did you have something? Yes.
Yeah. So have you run this through the fire department, and what are their thoughts on that? Because maybe this requires taller buildings in some areas. Have they weighed in on this at all?
We can check in with them, but this doesn't really change the building form. So the zoning is in place. So they were part of that discussion in terms of when the heights and what type of form of building is allowed where. So they got to weigh in on that, but this doesn't, but it's good. We can share it with them.
Okay. And so I understand we're going to go from 5612 up to 6,500 over the next 25 years. That's 260 units per year. Doesn't sound like a lot, but every year it's certainly, that's a lot to be consistent at. Do you remember the number for the Airmark Apartments and Marvell and the Tukwila Urban Center? I guess it's just those two units. They were above 260?
I believe Marvell was 250-ish, I think. Do you remember, Jimmy?
Yeah, Marvell was 160, and then Airmark was 347 or so.
Apartments? 347 apartments?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's a new one opening up. Is it called Holden?
Yeah, that's an assisted living facility. Yep.
And does that count?
Good question. I'm not sure.
I'm also not sure. I know it counts for OFM, you know, for population, but I'm not sure how it factors into the housing unit number.
We'll ask from King County. I think it should, because it's people living there. Yeah.
Making a choice to live there.
Yes.
Right? So your memo would be helpful if it went on to say about Aramark and Marvell, what those numbers were, and what are some expected openings in 21? Like Holden's going to open, how many is that? What about the fourth Shag building? How many is that? Does that count?
Yes.
And the Bellwether one?
Mm-hmm.
And if we did 520 in 1 year, do we get the next year off?
Yeah, there's no, account. Yeah. Yeah, they're not going to hold anything. I mean, we don't control the market. So if we don't get this, yeah, you know, we're not sure
okay.
there's much we can do about it.
Okay. That's all the questions I have. So but this is just for discussion. So we're not moving it forward. We're just talking.
Correct. So if you are okay with a baseline, we don't necessarily need to get back to King County, but we want to tell them that we've briefed the council and there are no concerns with these baseline numbers. That's what we wanted to know from council, if it's okay to tell King County that we're good with the baseline numbers. So I heard some things about making some changes in the memo, so we can make those changes and put it in all council members, you know, circulate it to all council members. But we don't need to schedule it for committee of the whole. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. All right, the next item is an update on House Bill 1923, and that's the Transit-Oriented Development Housing Strategy Plan that we have. And this is Minnie. So go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, so Meredith is here. She'll speak to this.
Meredith.
Hello. Hi, council members. Minnie is here to help me answer questions afterwards. So I'll keep my overview brief because I've talked about the background of this bill and the grant opportunity in the past, and it's all in your packet, and I know we have a full agenda. So since the last time I came to committee last September, the CDN committee, a large portion of the public outreach for the Housing Action Plan has been completed. I worked with Naisha and Minnie and the consultant to decide how we wanted to go about the outreach for this plan. We ended up conducting interviews and focus groups with some key stakeholders from groups including Tukwila residents, faith-based organizations, city staff, housing developers with experience developing in Tukwila, cultural organizations, landlords, and youth. And participants were asked questions regarding their perception of housing availability in Tukwila and their vision around the Tukwila International Boulevard Link Station in terms of housing. So we are also planning to host an informational open house about this plan late this month because based on previous outreach, we know there's a lot of interest and we want to make sure we're keeping residents informed and, you know, giving them a venue to ask questions and voice their opinion or as many venues as possible for that. Given the tight grant deadlines for the plan adoption. So before I jump into the most recent draft report that we've received from the consultant, I wanted to take a quick second and go over just the area that this plan is focusing on, which is the transit-oriented development or TOD area around the light rail station. So this actually encompasses all properties within a half mile walk shed of the station, excluding the few that fall into the area that are zoned low density residential. I think this reaches about up to South 148 along TIB. So that's the area that we're looking at for this plan, just a half mile walk shed. So in January, our consultant Echo Northwest provided us with a draft opportunities, barriers, and displacement mitigation report. And that's intended to incorporate the results from the public engagement process and the development feasibility studies that they did to offer a detailed look at the opportunities and barriers for housing development and displacement mitigation and recommendations that Tukwila consider to encourage more housing types and affordability levels in the TOD area, so in that half mile walk shed. This draft report includes 18 recommended actions, which are only recommended for the properties within that area that I mentioned. And all 18 recommended actions in the draft report are in your packet. I believe they start on page 8. I'm not going to go through and read each of them because that would take a while, but we can talk through any of them that you might have questions about. Including these actions into the report would not make any amendments to the Tukwila Municipal Code or any zoning changes itself. It would just act as a next step to considering them as changes in the future. So, for instance, if the recommended action of reducing step back requirements, I think it's on A group on your list, is included in this plan, adopting the plan would not mean that all of a sudden staff requirements are reduced. It would just mean that this is an action we might look at in the future if it is decided to move forward with. It would have to go through a formal code amendment process to actually make that change. So including these recommended actions in the plan is not the mechanism that would actually make those changes. And as for next steps, I mentioned earlier, we plan to host a public open house late this month, followed by a formal public meeting with the Planning Commission in April. Planning Commission will provide a recommendation to City Council by the end of May, and staff will bring the plan to the PCD committee and to Council in June for final adoption. So tonight, we're just looking to get your input on this list of recommendations and answer any questions you might have on it before we get on the calendar for the Planning Commission.
Okay, so before I send this over to Verna, when this goes to the Planning Commission, if they take something off the table entirely, let's say they recommend, we'll still see it, right? So, like, let's say that they say, we don't want to do C2, take that off. We don't even want to do that. You would still have some sort of matrix where we could say that the Planning Commission decided to do that. That was totally arbitrary, the example that I gave.
Yeah. We would say this is what we gave to Planning Commission. This is the recommendation. So you'd see both.
So we'd see city recommendation planning just like we've done in the past. The matrix. All right. Thank you. So Verna, comments or questions?
Yeah, thank you. What's so interesting to me about this is these are so many recommendations that we have heard over and over and over again. I mean, I've been on the council almost 16 years, and I can go back to, I remember we had a meeting, I think it was a joint City Council Planning Commission meeting with the City of SeaTac. And I can remember talking the consultants then making some of these same recommendations, which is interesting to me. With that said, I like the public outreach that has been done. I really like a lot of these recommendations. I think that they're very timely, long overdue. And I am perfectly comfortable with this going on to the process and the next steps that you have outlined. And I really don't have any questions because we're going to see it again. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Tom.
I want to ask about A4. When we talk about adjusting the recreational space requirements, because I think that's been a barrier to other building developments. And so when you say adjust, I mean, what about eliminate that requirement?
I think from what we heard from the public outreach, developers might not like the recreation space requirement, but people who live in the area do. They definitely enjoy having that recreation space, that open space. So I think keeping it as adjust leaves the options for us in the future if you do want to eliminate them within that half mile watershed. This recommendation right now, our current recreation space requirements are based, I believe, on number of units. That's what determines how much recreation space we require. And so adjusting it to be per a percentage of the lot area just gives developers a little bit more wiggle room and to play with, I guess.
Well, I can see it as a attraction to the tenants, but I've also heard developers say it's a barrier to development. And so how do we find that fine line that, you know, they have the freedom to accommodate something like that to make it an attractive complex, but at the same time, it doesn't get in the way of development, because I think that has happened in the past. So do you think that how you've worded that here accommodates that? Do you think you've hit that sweet spot?
Maybe reread it.
You might have. I'm not saying.
We could definitely reword this to emphasize finding a balance between development feasibility and quality of life. That could be included in there, but I think that is touched on later in the report and isn't, you know, maybe addressed in this table that kind of summarizes the goals or the recommended action.
Okay.
But we can adjust that if you think that would be helpful.
I just don't want it to be a barrier. And I think that even from people that have previously worked in this department have just said that we've got to lighten up on that. That we're asking too much, and I think it's gotten in the way of development. So that's my thought. I'll yield back.
Okay. So I have a lot of questions about the minutiae of detail. I've got a lot of interest in this. But I am very interested in the Planning Commission taking a look at it first, because we will have a chance to see it afterwards. Let them take the first bite at the apple, as we say, and let them go through it. And that was why I asked the question about if everything is still going to be intact as far as what we have here afterwards. So if we really don't like anything that the Planning Commission is amended, we can always go back to that, or we could just look at what they've done. So they're going to do the first digging deep into, and that's going to bring out a lot of answers to things that I'm not going to ask right now, because those things will probably be answered as it goes through the Planning Commission process. So it's quite clear. It looks really good, easy to read, easy to think through the section with the recommended actions. They did a great job. ECO, is that what that's called?
ECO? Yeah, ECO Northwest.
Okay. So what were any other comments first from Tom or Verna before we move this on? So it looks like it's going to go through a public process and then to the Planning Commission and then back to us. And that's okay with the committee? All right, I've got head nod. Thank you, Meredith.
Thank you.
Yeah. And the last item on our agenda is the Healthcare Housing Initiative, and we heard a presentation about that last Monday, as you always call. And so at that time, we said we were going to bring it into committee, and so here we are in committee. Minnie, are you going to be introducing this topic?
Sure. Good evening, council members again. So this is Chair, you said this was a presentation that King County Department of Community and Housing Services, Leo Floor, and Kelly Ryder, Government Relations Manager, gave to council. And council had a lot of questions and discussion on this topic, and it was decided to come back to the committee. And so we wanted to put it on the agenda so there was room for a council discussion. Just as a background, as you all know, King County Council adopted the 0.1% countywide sales tax in October 2020, which was authorized by House Bill 1590. And the anticipated amount that King County hopes to collect is $50 million per year. And the goals that King County has is to house 1,600 King County residents that are experiencing or at risk of experiencing homelessness. What King County is looking at is to acquire buildings that are single room settings, similar to a hotel, for instance. But they've made their goal that before they do any site acquisition, they'd like to know if the city supports this general concept or if there are any additional concerns. So based on what we saw the discussion at the council meeting, we tried to articulate some topics of discussion that might be useful for this committee to start the discussion, which are outlined in your memo. So one of the things county wants to know is, does the city support this general concept? And then I think at the staff level, we were trying to come up with some questions that you maybe help council and the community to know what sorts of things we should be looking at. You know, are there any location concerns that we should take into consideration? Are there some provisions for Tukwila residents who are experiencing homelessness? Should those be prioritized in accommodating those individuals? And then, open-ended question of what additional information would help council and, get a handle on this topic. There is community interest. I see some members of the community on the call here today, and I think Laurel sent out an email that came in on this topic for two council members. Hopefully everyone has seen that. So with that, I'll leave it up to council's discussion and direction for staff.
Thank you, Minnie. So, Tom, we'll have you start. We'll start with this. We've got a set of four questions that the council has for us, and then staff has for council, and then you probably have other questions that you'd like to ask. We'll start with you.
I'm interested in the general concept. I think there are a lot of questions that we need to put on the table and have discussion about. Maybe some of our next steps would be to gather all the questions and put them on the table. But one of the questions that I have is, what exactly is going to be the goal of this facility? Is it going to be just to get them off the street, or is there a rehab component to it? I want to be clear on what exactly we're wanting to see happen. Because if the goal is just to get them off the street, then maybe it's not supported in a way that helps create healthy citizens and kind of gets people back into society. I want to be really clear on the goal. Is it just to get 1,600 people out of a tent and into a building and now mission accomplished? Or is there something more that we want to see happen out of this? And I guess based on that, I might have a lot of questions how are we going to do some of that? And I'd like this to be really clear on it. So I would like some of the next steps to be to be really clear on the goal and what is going to be the involvement of Tukwila, what's going to be the impact it'll have on Tukwila. And, a year from now, how are we measuring success with this? Or 5 years from now, we're saying this was successful because, but we got 1,600 people out of a homeless situation and they still live there. Their lives haven't improved much since then. But I mean, how are we defining success with this? And what is going to be the impact on Tukwila? Can that be articulated? And how would we articulate that? So there's some initial thoughts right there. I'll yield back.
Thank you. Why? Can you hear me? I can't. Okay. Thank you. Yes, my mic is on. Verna.
Okay. First of all, I believe that every city in this region has a responsibility to deal with this issue. I mean, I don't think it should be left up to one, city, just because that city's bigger than that city. I think everybody has their fair share. So I absolutely support the general concept. I mean, to me, this is the best plan I've seen come down the pike in a long time. Dedicated funding source and a basic plan. One of the things I remember from the other night when we had this presentation, I think it was last Monday, when we were talking about, households experiencing chronic homelessness. And that looks very different. That can be the person living under the bridge. That could be the kid sleeping on somebody's couch or the family living, in so-and-so's basement because they don't have any place else to go, or living in cars or living in motorhomes. Or I don't see this as people that we necessarily see on the street every day, because it's bigger than that. At least that's what my experience has been for the last 25 years living here and seeing it right now. And on top of that, I think we mentioned this the other night, we're at the point in this pandemic where we're coming up to a cliff. I don't think the situation is going to get better before it gets worse. And I think that if we can find a good way that does, yes, we need to make sure it fits in our community, right? We need to make sure that it's in the right place. It has all these, the components, Tom, that you talked about. But, we don't know any of that yet. And I think all King County is asking us to do right now is, are you willing to work with us? And all of these, because I mean, like, let's just say today we said, okay, yep, we're going to work with you. I think this is great. Let's go forward. This is a long process, you know, with, as far as, you know, looking at zoning issues, looking at where, you know, where is this place at, or all these other things. But, you know, I'm comfortable enough with it to say, yeah, let's look at it. Maybe we do need to get, because these are really kind of broad questions right here, these four right here. I mean, we could spend hours just coming up with all the questions, right? So I personally, I'm not ready to launch this back out of this committee yet. What I would like this committee to do, this is just my, what I think, is let's look at all these questions. Can bring this back? Because right now, this is huge. I mean, it's hard to wrap your brain around it. But what I do know, what I feel, and from my experience working in these areas, is that this is the first time I've actually seen a regional approach that makes sense to me, that can, we can take action without having to wait 15 years before something is built. There's a dedicated funding source that's not going to go away. And again, and I'll just end with, I think it's a regional problem, and I think that every city in the region has a responsibility for the people that live in our community, and those are those people that might not be living in a house or traditionally housed. So, and we have a lot of them. There's a lot of them. We might not see them on the street, but we know they're there. You know, I've raised a few. So I'll just end with that.
Thank you. So I have lots of questions too, and I'm just going to start with supporting what Verna said and agreeing with that, that it would be great if we could come out of this committee with a bunch of answered questions, so that then when we get to the back to the committee of the whole, we've got some answers. So the scenario is, if you've got a motel, and you've got, let's say, a woman who's been abused and now she's under a bridge or something. You've got this whole motel full of people that have not been able to shut and lock a door. And what Leo said about this transforming people really, really resonated with me. I've been thinking about that ever since, how important it is that if we can give people a warm place and some place to sleep, how important that is, and to have that place be safe and secure. And those are the questions that I want to bring out about the sense of safety and security for not only the people that are living in that facility, but for the residents around this facility. So that means this needs to be done right. And at the end of the last meeting, I asked about how many people that are going to be in this facility will be substance abusers. And the answer that I got was a little concerning, because I didn't get the answer in just a low number. The answer was, well, a lot of people have substance abuse problems that are experiencing homelessness. Okay, that's right. Okay, that's something that we need to think about. And then it was said, but we will be having, quote, unquote, wraparound services for them. Okay, so what does that look like? Because, again, remember that I asked the question, so are they going to be able to use in their rooms? And the answer was a little vague, like, yes, they can be using in their rooms. Well, what is that, heroin needles? Does that mean that they'll be using outside of their rooms, using out when they're walking around the street? We really, to be fair to ourselves and to the community, we need to know what that is going to look like. And then what you said is, what is the intent? Are we just going to house people and then they're going to get their services somewhere else? It is very noble to be housing people, but at the same time, I don't think we're doing anybody a favor unless we have those quote, unquote, wraparound services, rehab, as you called it, or whatever that is. So, and that to me would be done right. Another question that I have is, if I was a mom with a single kid, let's say, so there's two of us and we could have that hotel room, would I really want to be in a facility where there's other people, you know, using needles and things like that? Or would I rather that they were in a hotel that was located in an area that was farther away, or maybe just all housed together and this is all separate? We don't have those answers. Like, so what does this look like? How does it look safe? How do we do this right and really make it transformative to people? So there's a lot of questions that if we get answered will help us with our peace of mind when it comes to this process. I'm going to bring something else up, and that is location. One of the locations that has been talked about is over a major freeway, and it is in a neighborhood that's compromised already. I don't really know, so that would be the 51st Street, that there might be some challenges for 51st Avenue South. Okay, I can tell, you know, so Verna, did you want to say something? No. Okay.
Yeah, I can hear, I have not heard a specific location mentioned. I heard an extended, are you talking the, I think Derek did bring up the extended stay. Somebody did, right?
I'm not sure about that location, but
I can't remember. Yeah.
So how can we, once we give the green light, I'm just concerned that if we give a green light, then it's just like, okay, so now we're just going to go forth and do our thing, King County. Great. But we need to know what they're doing, and we need to be able to be accountable to the community as far as what they're doing. And again, this goes back to asking the questions that are here. Let's see. I had questions. There was an email that came in that had a lot of questions that were along the same lines of some of the ones that I was going to be asking. What kinds of services will be offered on site? I have the email printed out. And who's providing the services? Will children be sheltered with people? Are they residents when they come in? So there's some good questions here that would be good to have the answers to. There's some things about drug testing and background checks. So how does that work? How is that going to work? Drug use in the premises. Again, that's a question I have. And that could be framed in many different ways. It's like, how are you going to provide services for people if they are in these facilities and they have a substance abuse problem? Or do we want to just have a facility that is for some substance abusers? And we have 85% of the people are probably going to be from outside of Tukwila. Who is being brought into our community? So, These are tough questions. Let's answer them. This is what I feel like. Let's answer them so that we can have peace of mind before we bring in what is a good idea done right. Tom and then Verna.
Okay. We'll run out of committee time tonight, and I know we can move this forward to another committee. I'd be willing even to have a special committee workshop on it, just to ask if that would be helpful. Because I think one of the things that would be really helpful, can we articulate as many questions as we think should be on the table, maybe show the rest of the council these 8 questions we didn't pursue because we think that the 12 we came up with are really going to be the ones that encompass a lot of our concerns, and kind of bring that type of effort out of committee. But I'd be willing to do some extra work on it because I think it's a concept worth pursuing. Like Verna said, we need a regional approach that all the cities can buy into. So we're not redlining, you know, some cities and other cities are having to, you know, do a little bit more. So I would say I really want to be able to be clear. Here's the goal. Here's what we're trying to do. Here's the impact it's going to have on the city. Here's what the city may have to contribute towards it. But when we get done, we can measure our results based on this. And we can come up with a lot of those questions ourselves and share that with the COW. I yield back.
Verna.
Yeah. I just want to make something clear here. So if, for example, we said, okay, we're giving you the green light. I'm looking at this one slide. We give you the green light. Then we identify a staff person. King County is just not going to go off on their own and do something. Don't they? They're partnering with us, which means we would have staff assigned. It would go through all regular processes, like for, I don't know, I can see a planning commission portion of this. Would it be a partnership, or does King County just kind of go off on its own and do its own thing?
No, I think it could be structured different ways. Once the council has a discussion about, you know, what I heard was questions about the program and measures, but then I think the other part of the question is what are the priorities that Tukwila wants to get addressed in through this effort if we are going to go through it? You know, what is in it for Tukwila? Is it more residents being housed? Is it more money for behavioral health services? How does that help some of the needs for our police department? Or, you know, it could be as broad as anything we could, if the community or the council chooses it to. Mm-hmm. Once we know what those framework are, then the legal mechanism could be an interlocal agreement with King County or some type of an agreement with King County that stipulates roles and responsibilities, outcomes. The discussion at the full council meeting talked about off-ramps, what if it isn't working, you know. So all of those will then be negotiated with King County in terms of what the framework will be. But I think the first step is to figure out what this, you know, I've heard a lot of questions about the program, and clearly from the information we got from the community members is what is it, how do we do it, how do we measure success? So those are questions for King County. We can pose mm-hmm. those to them and they can provide a response. The other part of the question, you know, the exploration of this program is Tukwila's needs assessment. And, you know, from a human services perspective, we have, I think, Stacey on the call here, but also from the police's perspective, you know, so there could be more broader information gathering internally within the city staff that we can provide to you if we knew what would be helpful in making some of those discussion points for council.
Yeah, and I think you hit that. That's exactly what I was thinking. And for example, I mean, we could negotiate one of the questions here, should existing Tukwila residents who are experiencing, you know, chronic homelessness be prioritized? That's something we can negotiate in. You know, we have a lot of need right here in our city. And, you know, for me, if I was negotiating this, that's what I would be negotiating for. And I think you're absolutely right. We've got, you know, Stacey and Hodo, they're on the ground. They know. And I think that there an assessment needs to be done. So that's all kind of part of these questions. But yes, there's a lot of mechanical questions, I guess, for the county on this. But then we need those answered. But then we need to figure out what this would look like for Tukwila and how it could help the people in our city, right? Because I would want to make sure that we're helping our residents. Not that I'm saying, oh no, you live in SeaTac or Beery and you can't come here and we can't help you too, but there's a prioritization and I think that's all, I think that could be negotiated. Oh, look, Rachel raised her hand. I'm done.
Are you done? Okay, Rachel, go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. So I did want to just give a little distinction about this program from other homelessness services is they really are talking about chronically homeless, right? And so the population that this is looking to serve, these are not the couch surfers, right? These are not the folks moving. These are the folks who are living outside largely, you know, and yes, we have these individuals in our community. We absolutely do. As part of the legislation that is going through, I think Leo mentioned that the county has to get legislation out of Olympia in order to make this happen because the funding source is currently only for new construction. So as part of that legislation that was amended, it included two things. One is it required the willing city, right, which the county's already committed to, but the legislation will back that up, obviously. And two, it also creates a threshold where the county has to make 15% of the units within the development, within the motel, let's say, available for residents of that city when feasible, right? Because this is a difficult to reach population, right? And so you may not always be able to move people into this program, but I just wanted to provide that little bit of distinction for you as you're thinking through the program, because it is just, those nuances are important as we work through this. I want to also say that I fully agree with Minnie This is an ILA process. This is a negotiation at the end of the day. And you're not, the city of Tukwila will not be a willing participant until you sign that ILA, right? And so there is the opportunity to have this discussion moving forward to get these questions answered before you get to that point where you need to actually flip the switch on being a willing city. So thank you.
Okay, so our council meeting is in 15 minutes. I got a little notice here. So I am going to ask my fellow committee members if you are okay with me going back to Laurel and talking about next steps as far as how we get questions answered. And then like it could look like us submitting our questions. I know staff's heard them, but if we want to make sure that they that it's clear that we've asked that question. For example, Tom, you asked, what is the goal? Is it rehab or is it housing or is it both? Some of those questions I know staff's probably heard, but we might want to articulate those questions again. I'm going to run this by Laurel and see how she thinks we might do this best. And is it true that we want to get some of these questions answered before we move forward on?
I agree. I'd like to get some of these questions answered. And it would be helpful to have maybe some sort of a brief briefing from Human Services. You know, like, what are we seeing? And I think that is kind of, like Manny said, between the police department and Human Services. Like, what are we talking? You know, if it's 15%, what does that look like? Well, look, hey, there's Stacy. Raise her hand.
Okay, so Stacy, yes, you have some comments. You're welcome to speak.
Thank you.
I'd like to hear you.
Thank you so much. And I want to reiterate what Rachel said and both what Minnie said and be really clear that the folks who come to HODO and myself, rarely on occasion are we talking about the homeless folks that we would see wandering on the street maybe who have some co-occurring behavioral health issues. And that's the population who we're really talking about here. So the homeless that HODO and I see are referrals from the school district. They're referrals from friends and neighbors who are the couch surfing folks in our community. It is more of the folks who are stable in their instability in their housing. So they are rarely folks who are living in their car, although I am currently working with somebody. They are folks who have experienced something that is recently happening. They're staying with a family member just briefly until they can get back on their feet. So we're really talking about different populations that HODO and I are seeing compared to who the police see for certain, number one. And number two, I think who the police see are much more likely the folks that who are in Tukwila, who we would be talking about how do they get into stable housing that have supportive services available so that they can maintain that housing and have that door that locks and be secure and be safe and have services on site that help them finally be able to address some of the complications in their life that have led them to where they currently are.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll throw that information in also when talking to Laurel and see how things work out. I want to give everyone some time to have a little break before the council meeting. So at the risk of being abrupt, I'm going to close this discussion and it will be continued in this committee meeting. I mean, in this committee setting.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
So much.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, everybody.
Guys.
Yes.
Thank you. Off we go.
Bye.
Bye. See you in a few minutes.
Bye. Thank you.